They're really just at Area 51, and Jamie just goes there and chats with them. Oh, no.
And the alien is actually Claude.
Oh, my. Everybody storm in Area 51, and then just there he is, just like, sup. Oh, no. This is why the drought needs to end.
Bringing you everything under the Disney umbrella. Network 1901.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Lipstick and Lightsabers. I am one of your hosts, Shannon.
And I'm Alex.
And today we are going to be doing a character spotlight all about our favorite girl, Kira from Solo. But first, we do have a couple of little news items that I think we should get into. So something interesting happened in Fandom recently. Do you want to give us a little rundown on that, Alex?
Basically, all of Lucasfilm has been woobifying Ben Solo all week, and so all I have to say is Ben Solo uwu.
It's amazing. Like, I just think of people who say that, like, Raylos are the ones who woobify Ben Solo, and it's like, do you not see Lucasfilm? Do you see what they do?
And I just, like, I'd like to give out a good shout-out to Sarah, who was trying to convince Anthony to wear a Kylo Ren is baby shirt on the Star Wars show this week. Uh-huh. Maybe next week it'll happen. I don't know.
I feel like that would be a great thing to wear, like, after episode 9 premieres. Mm-hmm. Like, he just has it waiting in the wings.
Yes.
That would be great. Yeah, for anybody who's not in the Twitter Raylo community, I think it started when they posted, like, a throwback image of Kylo Ren, and everybody in the comments was just like, he's baby, or ooh, that kind of stuff. And then it just spiraled, and we got pictures of baby Ben Solo, and it was just... It was great. People from Lucasfilm jumped in on that, and it's just a great time to be alive. And we're all slowly going insane because we're in a drought. So.
Well, I feel like we're kind of exiting that drought because Crash of Fate comes out today, the day that this episode comes out, and then it'll just be books until November, like nonstop.
That's true.
That is very true. I mean, Thrawn Treason did come out 2 weeks ago, but neither of us has read it yet. We will. No. We'll get there.
Yeah, both of us, like, you finally have it at your library. Mm-hmm. My library still doesn't have it, and I just check it every so often, and, like, I would be lying if I said that I was, like, upset by the fact that my library still doesn't have it.
Yeah. I should be getting the audiobook in 2 weeks. But I don't think we'll be doing an episode about this book.
No, yeah, sorry to disappoint any Thrawn fans. We will probably touch on it because we'll both read it.
Yeah.
Just like how we're going to touch on the new comic that we got in this episode. But it will not have a review episode. Mm-hmm. And Alex will read it first, so she'll get to summarize everything.
Sure.
You heard it here first, guys. Mm-hmm. So something else that happened this week, Alex and I finally watched Ophelia. We're kind of late to that Ophelia train, but it's amazing. So go watch it.
It was really, really great. I was pleasantly surprised by it because I think it got some mixed reviews, I would say. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I thought Daisy Ridley's performance was amazing.
Yeah, I really didn't know what to expect, honestly. And so, like, I don't know what I was expecting, but it just wasn't what I thought it would be in a really good way. And that makes no sense.
It's always nice to see Tom Felton.
Oh, we love Tom Felton. If your name is Tom, we probably love you.
We've also slowly been going crazy this week with the lack of content. And we just send each other pictures of Tom Holland every day.
Yeah, so it was Spider-Man Day, and Alex drew another picture of Tom Holland as Spider-Man, and I made it my phone background, and everybody at work was so confused, because they're like, I thought you liked Kylo Ren. And I'm like, are you saying I can't like this baby boy too? Like, are they really that different? Oh, this is hilarious, though, because my friend who I work with, he asked me who I would rather meet, Adam Driver or Tom Holland. And I'm like, you don't understand. This is like a bigger conversation than you think it is. Because like, on one hand, like, Tom Holland is amazing, but I would be so giggly. I don't even know if I could say any words to him. But then Adam Driver is just so tall. He's like a foot taller than us. And that's like an experience. So probably Tom Holland, but...
Oh my god, yeah, and Gina was trying to get us to go to AceCon in October, and I'd really like to, but I'm saving up to go to Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, maybe he'll be at Galaxy's Edge, because he's got to play Thane Kyrell.
Oh.
They just need to announce it.
Yeah.
I don't care if he's too short. I don't care.
He's not that short.
He was taller than I thought he was. This is all we've been doing, okay, guys? Sorry, maybe this should be cut out. That's okay. That's just, you know, that's what we're here for. But moving on to some Star Wars. We did get a new comic this week. So we got the Age of Resistance Special number 1. This featured a story about Holdo, Maz, and BB-8. We're going to get a couple other little things in there as well. But all of the stories are pretty short. I think it was overall a good comic. There's not a whole lot that you can really pull out of it, though. Not like the Finn and Phasma comics.
Yeah. It was really enjoyable. Like, it was easy to read, and some of the art was really beautiful. The Maz one, everyone, I think, has seen that one panel of her sitting on Chewie's shoulders with guns blazing, just, like, screaming. It's awesome. Yep.
I mean, there's definitely some, like, funny character moments, for sure. I feel like Maz's could be leading into something bigger. Mm-hmm. Just because she knows so much. I did really like, there's this one panel in the Maz one where she's talking to Han, and she said, and you run away better than anyone I've ever known. And yeah. My heart cracked a little bit. I was like, aww. Oh, that's sad. And also, Holdo using plants to dye her hair purple is me.
We finally know how she gets that purple so vibrant.
That was definitely the burning question on everyone's mind.
It kind of looks like a Venus flytrap that does it.
Was it barking?
Burk, it says. Burk.
Burk. I need this plant. I would like that. That'd be great. And then I did like in BB-8's, he kind of starts his own little droid uprising, which was very reminiscent of me of L3, which I thought was cute. And we get a lot, especially in the Solo tie-in novels, which we are talking about today because we're going to talk about Most Wanted, about droid uprisings. And so I think that's interesting that they're still bringing that in some ways, in the sequel trilogy. But I guess with that, we're going to move into our main discussion of the day, which is Kira. She's a character that I think when she was first introduced, everybody didn't really know what to make of her. I know a lot of people didn't know if they were going to like her because she was going to be Han's love interest and they weren't sure, but it was Emilia Clarke, so that's awesome. But what do you remember from, like, the early stuff that we got of Kira?
Before the movie came out, there was so much talk about whether this character was going to be a love interest or not, and a lot of people kind of taking sides on, like, what they were okay with. And there were some people that were like, you know, like, I'm okay with her being another love interest, depending on how it's written. And I feel like that was probably the most popular take, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And the thing is at this point, we've already seen Leia with another love interest in Leia, Princess of Alderaan. So it's not like, oh, the question that, like, that's possible. Like, obviously, like, they've had, like, past relationships. But I think what people were scared of was that was all she was going to be. That's all that her function was going to be, is just kind of, like, to be man pain for Han. So, and I think that after the movie came out, I think there's been a lot of different opinions about what people think of her and how her story was told.
She's just so, there's so much up in the air. And I think a lot of that comes down to, like, how Emilia Clarke plays it. Like, the character's really more, the character is so much more nuanced than I think they had intended her to be. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they had intended it, but they just didn't realize, you know, like, how crazy it was going to get.
Yeah.
Because I remember when we, like, first seeing this movie, and all I could think about was I needed to know more about Kira. Like, there's so much more going on. The way that the movie ends off, like, you just don't know who she is. You don't really get, like, a secure read on her. You can't ever tell if she's lying. And I know for me, like, that's the main thing that I would want if we ever got, like, a Solo 2. Instead of more Han, like, I want more Kira. There's something there, right?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people agree that it should be some sort of maybe like a Disney Plus series or something that includes her, Maul, maybe some Han in it, but not necessarily like just focus on Han.
Oh, definitely. Which I think that would be so cool. Mm-hmm. There's so much you can do here. So Kira in Solo is, you know, she kind of grew up a little bit with Han. She was in the White Worms with him. She was a fellow scrum rat. And I think, like, right off the bat, what's interesting about her is that she very much, like, she wants to get away. She wants to, like, have a life of her own. But then she gets left behind. And you see a lot of that through Han's eyes because Han is always thinking about her. He's always pining after her. And so then when he meets her again and he sees that she's changed, I think it's interesting when you look at it through Han's, like, the context of Han's story, that he kind of has to face the facts that, like, she's been through so much. And, like, she wasn't just waiting there for her, you know, like, in stasis. Like, life still kept happening to her. And so for Han, that's something that he has to grapple with. But then, like, as a viewer, you want to know, what is that backstory? What happened? Like, how did she get to this point? And I do like that in the novels that we get, you do get to learn that. But there's still a little bit of mystery in there, too. Mm-hmm. So let's get into Most Wanted. Do you want to give the summary for this?
Okay. So the summary for Most Wanted is, Han and Kira don't have a lot in common other than not having a lot. They're just another couple of scrum rats in the White Worms gang on the industrial shipyard planet of Corellia, doing whatever it takes to get by, dreaming of something more. When their boss, Lady Proxima, separately offers each of them a chance to prove themselves and get a big promotion in the process, Han and Kira jump at the opportunity. They don't realize they're actually going head-to-head on the same mission until the mission goes horribly wrong. Now Han, Kira, and a sweet-natured Rhodian scrum rat named Sulo on the run from pirates, the Empire, and Lady Proxima, and will have to learn to trust each other if they want a chance of surviving. The odds are against them, but odds don't matter much when there's nothing left to lose.
Yeah, so this book is, it's a YA novel by Rae Carson, and it came out the day Solo came out?
Yeah, the same day. So neither of us had a chance to read it before seeing the movie, because we both saw it opening day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, I remember, like, coming off of Solo, like I said, like, I wanted more Kira. Having this book to be, like, you could immediately read it after seeing Solo was great.
Yeah.
Because you get more of that in there.
Well, I remember, we've talked about this before, about how our first viewing of Solo was good, but not great. And then we read this book and it improved the movie a lot, especially like the beginning and just like the relationship between Han and Kira. We felt it improved the movie a lot. And then after we read the Solo novelization, then our enjoyment of the movie changed a little bit. So like, I remember seeing Solo right after reading this book and it being like the peak enjoyment of Solo.
Yeah. Cause like you get context for that whole beginning sequence of the movie, which a lot of people talk about, like, if you were to tweak Solo around, you could, like, shorten that section. And if you look at the deleted scenes, it was going to be a lot longer and, like, all this kind of craziness. But what's amazing about Most Wanted and what could have been really great about the opening scenes of Solo with them on Corellia is that Han and Kira are very different. but they're different in a way that makes each other better, if that's kind of the right way to say it. Like, they balance each other out. They have a really good dynamic.
Yeah. Balance is the perfect word.
Balance is the perfect. There are a lot of Reylo parallels here. Kira is somebody who is a thinker. She's a survivor. And she isn't very emotional. She very much has to, like, keep her emotions in check. Like, there's even, right off the bat on page 9, it says, Kira shared her disgust, but she kept her face emotionless. She always kept her face emotionless. She's somebody who knows that, like, you can't reveal yourself to people. So she has a lot of secrets. Whereas Han, and they even say it in this book, like, his emotions are always all over his face. And he's always thinking with his gut. And Kira is not that kind of person. She always has a plan. So seeing that dynamic not only gives you, like, more context for the Han that we see in the sequel trilogy, I think, but it also gives you a lot more of Kira and who this character is and maybe where she goes later on. Mm-hmm. I like that she is such a survivor because there's clearly, like, more pain and angst there.
Things that they don't necessarily touch upon in the movie, they just kind of hint at things. And in the book, it's a little bit more, like, detailed on what happened in those novelization about what happened to her in those 3 years.
Yeah, because she's somebody who never has to trust anybody. Like, she can never trust anybody. She can only trust herself. And, like, you get the thought that she was probably abandoned or somebody left her at some point, and so she's decided that, you know, it can only be her. So even though she may look up to people and she may, like, kind of emulate people, she never fully trusts them. And she really becomes kind of like a perfect, she becomes what people want her to be, I think. Mm-hmm. Or they want her to be.
What she needs to be to survive.
Yeah, that's for sure. Because when Han abandons her, like, she kind of has to reevaluate everything. Han was her escape plan. Han was her chance to maybe find a better life. And now that he's gone, it's not so much that she's upset that she lost her friend, although she is, because throughout Most Wanted, you see Kira figure out how to trust and gain some friends. But I think more than anything, it's, okay, now I have to take a step back and reevaluate and have a new plan now.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about Most Wanted is it really isn't a romance.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about their friendship. And then when we catch up, I think 2 years later at the beginning of Solo, there is romance there. And you only see it maybe like a glimmer of a possibility of romance at the end of Most Wanted.
Yeah. And I think there's a line in Solo I didn't pull out, but Han says that they had like an interesting like teenage crush. And then complex adult emotions is, like, how they put it. Because in Most Wanted, like, there really isn't a whole lot of feelings for Han other than friendship on Kira's part. And Han is very much a romantic. He's very attached to her. There's even, like, an extended scene with them, like, running away from things. And, like, he thinks about her all the time. And that's just not how Kira operates. Because she's a thinker, she's a planner, that's what she's going for. And I think at the end, when she's finally able to, like, allow herself to be a little bit more trusting and be a little bit more vulnerable with Han, that's where that door opens a little bit, which is then immediately slammed shut when she gets left behind.
Yeah.
I really love this quote where it says, "A funny feeling twinged in her chest. It was the feeling she always got when someone wanted to do something nice for her, and she didn't know if there were strings attached." Like, she's so used to people only wanting to use her.
Yeah, taking advantage of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she doesn't understand that, like, some people will just do things out of the goodness of their heart.
It kind of reminds me of, is it in Before the Awakening?
With Rey?
Rey's story about trusting those other scavengers on Jakku and then being let down. It kind of reminds me, like, of that.
Well, and especially even how Rey reacts, because she reacts in a way where she, like, oh, well, of course this was going to happen. It was inevitable. And Kira is the same way, because she just expects that of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big theme in Most Wanted, is at some point in the book, kind of towards the end, and a little bit of spoilers, but not really, she is offered everything she's ever wanted, and she realizes that it is everything she's ever wanted, but if she were to take this opportunity, she would just be a tool, whereas if she stays with Han, she would be a person, because Han makes her feel like a person, and that's something that nobody has ever made her feel before. It's on page 293. Han treated everyone they encountered like a person, even her, especially her. She felt like Han looked past the surface things that everyone saw and recognized her as worthy of respect. If Kira decided to accept the engineer's offer, she would stop being a person.
And it's so crazy because obviously Han isn't the only person in the galaxy who is kind and sees the world like that, and people are all people, but the fact that Kira hasn't experienced that her whole life is, like, so sad.
It's very Ben to me, because, you know, we learn with him that he kind of grows up, like, with Snoke constantly in his head, and Snoke just wants to use him and, like, use him for his power, and even Han says that. It's like, Snoke is just using you and all that kind of stuff, and I wonder if maybe he sees that in other relationships as well, and if that's another reason why he kind of turns against Luke, because, like, Luke never really understood him and was never super close, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so maybe he kind of gets that feeling from everybody that people just want him because he's the heir apparent to Lord Vader.
Would you say that Rey is the only person that sees Ben as, like, a person?
I would say yes. I think Leia... To a certain extent.
I was going to say, I think Leia, yes, but she just wasn't around enough for him to feel it.
Yeah. Well, and Leia is not very touchy-feely either. Like, that's something that we get in every book about Leia, that she keeps everything close to the chest. She doesn't really express her emotion that much. So when she's constantly busy, of course Ben wouldn't have felt that.
I was literally just reading a comic a few weeks ago with Leia, and it was during the rebellion, and after Yavin, some of the, like, the troops, the rebellion troops were calling her, like, an ice princess, and she just puts this wall up, right, because it's the only way she can handle it.
Yeah. I think they talk about that in Life Debt, I think, a little bit, about how Leia personally, like, when you get to know her, is not the Leia that you see. Like, she's not the general, the leader, the person who has to kind of just keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. Like, once you get to know her, you see that there's so much more depth. And she really does. She keeps that all close to her chest because she has to. Like, she has to be strong for everybody else. And I do think that you see a little bit of that in Kira, too, because she's a very complex person, and she has very complex emotions, but she can't ever let that show. She has to be perfectly poised. She has to have a plan. She has to be emotionless, because if she lets people in and she lets them see that she's vulnerable, she knows that they'll destroy her. Like, that's just what she knows from her experience. And Han's the only person who's never treated her that way. There's something else that we learn in this book, and it's that Kira loves beautiful things. And you see that when she gets, like, a new outfit. So she gets that outfit that we see her wearing at the beginning of Solo, and she just loves it. She loves the fact that she's not wearing rags. She loves the fact that it's clean. She gets to go into, like, the upper city, and she sees how beautiful and glittering and everything is. Like, that's what she wants for herself. Like, she loves beautiful things, and she wants to be a part of that world. And I think that adds some context into where we see her at when she's with Dryden, because she is a slave, but she's in this, like, gilded cage kind of thing.
Yeah. It's not quite what she wants, but she partially got, she sacrificed a lot of things to get those beautiful things.
Yeah. Well, and she always says that, you know, like, it's, the game is to keep surviving as long as you can. And I think with that mentality, like, getting from being, like, a scrum rat on Corellia to living on this beautiful pleasure yacht and getting to wear these beautiful clothes and being around all this luxury, she probably still sees it as a step up. You know, she's still winning because she's still surviving and she's in a better situation than she was. So that whole thing with her, you know, never trusting anybody. There is a line on page 275. She's talking to somebody called the engineer. And Kira, like, wants to know. She says, what's it going to take to feel safe, to survive, to be free of the people chasing you once and for all? And the engineer asks, do you feel safe, Kira? And she says, never. So she's always running. She's always trying to survive. She has never felt secure in her life, except for maybe that little home that she does make for herself on Corellia.
And you could say the same thing about Ben never feeling safe because he always had Snoke or Palpatine, whoever you think it is, looming over him.
Do you think you could say the same of Rey with her life on Jakku?
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anyone on Jakku looking out for her. She has to look out for herself.
And you get that parallel, too, because Kira makes this little... It's like in a trash heap. She makes this little home where she, like, has kept a little bit of money. She keeps a couple of little pretty things that she finds. It's a place that's, like, all her own, and it's probably the only place where she can ever feel like herself. And I think you see that with Rey. It's very reminiscent of when you see Rey's AT-AT in The Force Awakens with the flowers and everything. I do like that the end of this book, you get, by the end of it, you see Kira learn a little bit about how to be vulnerable. So she gets very close to Han and she gets very close to Sulo. And at the beginning, you know, she was saying that considering being somebody's friend made her feel like she couldn't escape, like she would freeze, she'd feel tight, she would start to close herself off. And by the end of it, she does start to open up a little bit more. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Han comes back for her. There's a scene that kind of happens where they get separated and she thinks that he's gone, but he comes back and he tells her, like, of course he'd come back for her. And she just says that, like, the words gutted her because no one had ever done that for her, ever. Everyone had always chosen to betray her.
She's so uncomfortable with vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. And I think Rey is, too, to a certain extent. Because you see that with, you know, she didn't expect, like, Finn to care about her and, like, try to get her out. Like, at the very beginning, she kind of has that reaction where it's just like, yeah, I'm fine. What are we doing? Like, yeah, we're going. She doesn't really want to make those connections because she is like, I have to be this person because I'm waiting for somebody to come back. She lies to herself. And I think Kira, she's not waiting for anybody because she's closed herself off so much. So she is now completely untrusting of everyone, even people that could possibly help her because she feels that betrayal. So the thought of being somebody's friend makes her feel trapped. Because she feels like she's getting forced into a situation that's going to have strings attached and she's not going to be able to get out of. She's not in control of it.
She doesn't want to feel indebted to anyone.
Mm-hmm. That is a huge thing. And that's actually in the Solo novelization. Like, right off the bat, when she's thinking about Han, it's cool in the Solo novelization because you get it from so many different perspectives. So when you're in Han's point of view, everything is about how much he cares about Kira and how much he wants to get back to her. He's constantly thinking about her. But with Kira, it's very much like she owes him and she doesn't like to owe people. And she is his friend and she does care about him, but he is like, this is my ticket out of here. I need to get away. It's very different. It's very detached kind of way. I've actually been rereading The Hunger Games and she reminds me a lot of Katniss. Because Katniss is very emotionless, but she will do anything to survive and make sure the people that she has decided to trust survive. And I think Kira is like that as well. We don't ever really get to see her get to that point, except for maybe at the end of Solo, where she'll sacrifice anything for people that she loves. But she's kind of that same way, where she's not super touchy-feely, but she is fiercely protective of the things that she's decided to hold dear. Do you want to move on to talking a little bit about Solo?
Yeah. We've definitely talked about the movie versus book a lot of times, but there's a lot in the book that adds to Kira.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a big part of it is being in her point of view and seeing how her mind works. And it's, having read Most Wanted, like, you've already seen how she always has a plan. She's very smart. She's super clever. She's always thinking really quickly. So, like, you already kind of have that context, and you see that come back in Solo, which is awesome. But it gives you so much more context for this person that you see that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense in the movie. I love seeing in the book how much Han is just always thinking about Kira and just always, like, he measures his life. I love this line in Solo. He measures his life in parsecs away from Kira. Like, mm-hmm. He's so, like, romantic and pining after her. And then when he's faced with her again, it's like hitting a wall. Yeah. Because she's so different. She's not this person that he remembers her. She's changed so much.
He's such a puppy.
I know, he's such a good boy. But we do get to find out what happened to her. And we find out because she gets to talk to L3 and have an actual conversation mm-hmm. about things that aren't boys. So her conversation with L3 starts around 161. Mm-hmm. And they're just talking, and, like, they're talking about their little problem, blah, blah, blah. And Kira starts, like, thinking about stuff, and she tells L3 is that her and Han tried to escape Corellia together. He got out, I didn't. She makes it sound simple. Mm-hmm. But then, like, she starts remembering what happened, and there's a line where she's taken back to Lady Proxima, and Kira says, well, she's thinking, Kira wanted to point out that it was Han who had hurt her, but since he had gotten away, she now had to stand for his crimes, too. Resentment, a seed planted in dry ground at the spaceport, got a little bit of water and began to squirm very slightly in her chest. Like, that's the beginnings of a villain, but I don't think she's ever really a villain.
And then we go on, and Lady Proxima decides to sell her to a slave dealer because she's no longer, like, trustworthy.
She even says, you did not fetch a good price. Disobedience is considered a very bad quality for a slave. Like, that's just ridiculous. Yeah, she goes from that slaver, and then she's sold to another one, which is finally Dryden. And she says that first year was hell, with numerous escape attempts and beatings. Nothing would break her spirit. Nothing would stop her from trying to get free. And that's the big thing with Kira, and that's the big thing that, like, her and L3 really connect over, is that feeling of, like, you also serve a master, but you think for yourself, and you are constantly trying to get free. And there is that scene that we kind of talked about a little bit in our L3 episode, where it's like, if the cage was open, would you fly out? And Kira says yes, but then we also know at the end of the Solo, when the door is open, she doesn't.
But he also tells her that she will never be free. She'll either be with Crimson Dawn or she'll die. He told her that she literally doesn't have a choice.
Yeah, that she will be with him forever. It even goes into their relationship a little bit, because she said that she was used to men looking at her like that. Usually it gave her power, but it made them underestimate her. But Dryden simply looked at her as if he were assessing meat at a market. Like, she's not a person to anybody. She's just something, like, an asset. She's a tool. Mm-hmm. She is something to be used. She is something that has value. And then it always goes back to Han, where Han looked at her like she was mm-hmm. a person.
And she would always imagine her with him, and that made her happy.
Yeah, that would make her smile. And I always think about, like, you got to think about all of the stuff that had to be going through her mind when she saw Han again. Because she's somebody who, that escape attempt was gone. This person who she felt comfortable with, this person that she trusted, is now gone. And in her mind, she can't hope for him to come back. She can't. She has to survive. She has to do things for herself. And so she reevaluates and she moves forward. And then suddenly being confronted with her past, being confronted with Han, who you could almost argue has stayed the same because he's always been trying to get back to her. Like, that it is that very much, like, let the past die kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. It's so sad.
It's so sad. It moves on. We probably talked about this in our L3 episode, but I do want to bring it up again when they're talking. And L3 tells her, it doesn't matter what they call you, you'll do whatever it takes. You're a survivor. You're what they made you, but you've made yourself too. Like, she needed to hear that. Her and L3 connect so much because of this, like, you know, only being valued for, like, what you can do, being used as a tool. Like, Kira is almost like a droid for other people.
And you could say that Lando looks at L3 like a person, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, you gotta find that person that allows you to, like, be you.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is that question of, if Han made her feel that way, you know, why wouldn't she go with him? And I think it comes down to, there's this exchange with them on 169, and it says, Kira had enough of men telling her who she could talk to or be with. Did you expect me to wait for you forever, Han? I didn't even have a chance to wait before I was just trying to survive, being passed from owner to owner. I do what I can to benefit myself, and right now, the greatest benefit to myself is serving Crimson Dawn and working with Dryden Vos. I'm not a droid you left behind, turned off, with nothing happening to it until you came back to turn me on. Like, she has, that's that resentment. She has so much resentment for Han for leaving her and then for expecting her to be exactly how he left her.
Because she's changed so much and he hasn't.
Do you think there's a little bit of that with Ben? You know, there is a lot of talk about, like, if there is a Bendemption, you know, he's changed a lot. Like, he had to become Kylo Ren, and he had to do that to survive, and being redeemed does not mean that that all goes away. And I think we do, that's kind of what we're getting at with Kira here, is that she can't be that Kira that Han remembers, because she's changed so much. And so, like, if he's willing to accept all of her, great. But she does resent him because he's expecting her to be that person that she just can't be anymore. You know, it hurt for Ben Solo to be Ben Solo. So that's why he became Kylo Ren. He closed all that off. And you see that come up in Fix. Like, does Rey love Ben Solo? Does she love all of him? Does she love Kylo Ren? Like, what's going to happen, you know, at the end of the day?
Daisy definitely alludes to not necessarily loving Kylo, but that's just her take on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Kylo Ren is not the best person.
No.
But I do think there's something to be said for accepting all of a person. You know, like, if he is walking towards the light and trying to be better, then that's what we want. But he can't go back to being whoever he was before. Because you can't ignore all that growth.
Like, walk towards the light and acknowledge the dark.
Yes. Yes, Kevin Scott, thank you. It's so good. It's so not, like, this is why Solo is so great and all the tie-in stuff is so great. I just wish the movie was better.
Yes.
It's irritating. Come on. So another thing that's super annoying in Solo is the Taris Kasi line where it's just like, Dryden taught me. But another thing that Merle Haggard does is kind of fix that just a little bit by actually going into, like, how she learned Taris Kasi and, like, why she learned it and, like, what was going on there. And I'm like, thank you.
The fighting style was designed to counter a Jedi. They never said that in the movie.
No. Like, well, and it's such a throwaway line in the movie, but then, like, once you learn that Darth Maul is behind Crimson Dawn, then it makes sense. But that's another thing that, like, you don't really connect until you, like, have to have all of the pieces. It's just like, thank you. Oh, I just found something. I was flipping through. I did not write this down. This is when they're doing the escape on Kessel, and it said, Kira caught sight of some of the slaves still huddled where they had been when the collars had fallen off, and she felt a small ache as she realized they were the truly broken things. They didn't need collars or restraining bolts. They belonged to the mine. What is your restraining bolt? L3 had asked her. Like, this is her realizing that, like, these people are free, but they won't fly out of the cage. And she's kind of coming to terms with, like, is she truly broken? Would she ever fly out of the cage? And that comes back to me with, like, Rey and Ben, where, like, Rey is in a cage of her own creation and won't fly out, like, of Jakku. Mm-hmm. And Ben is now free from Snoke's control, but what is he going to do with that?
Mm-hmm. But he was expecting her to join him.
I like the pain. Yeah, that whole idea of what is your restraining bolt and, like, what's keeping you from making better choices or keeping you from freeing yourself is really fascinating. Because, like, L3 liberates herself. L3 doesn't wait for somebody else to come in and save her. And you could argue that Kira is not waiting for somebody to save her, but that's mostly because she fully believes that there is no saving. There's only surviving. We're going to move into our Twitter question before we talk about the final bit of Solo and, like, the final bit with Kira, because it's our question is answered in the book. So we asked you guys, what do you think Kira's intentions were when she left Han on Savarine? And a lot of you guys said that she was trying to save Han, and a lot of you had some really awesome responses, and we're going to read a couple of them out. So do you want to start?
Mm-hmm. So Amy Wishman said, I think she felt like she couldn't escape her life, but he could and should, so she left him to save him. BB Kate Art said, number one, kiss Maul. Two, have baby. Three, sell baby. Maybe it depends on how thirsty.
Because Kira and Maul are Rey's parents.
Brad from Friends of the Force said, I think she truly wanted to go with him, but the fact that she was forever branded by Crimson Dawn left her with no choice in the matter, especially up against Maul.
I really like Steven's comment, because he said, she was just going out for cigarettes and milk. She'll be back any moment now.
Hollow Chronicles podcast said, a means to an end, an opportunity.
Ashley Pauls, she said, Kira is one of my favorite Star Wars characters. I think she's great because she's complex. She's more of a realist than Han, and she feels there's no way out of Crimson Dawn. She saves Han by saying goodbye. James W. said, what I love so much about her choice is that it is both selfless and selfish. She does genuinely want to protect Han, but the Kira that she is when she's away from him wants the power of Crimson Dawn, though that is tied in with her history of lost agency, so it's mighty murky waters. And Mike responded to that saying, I know Ron Howard views it as a selfless act. He sees her as keeping Han safe by putting herself in front and center. And this is something that made me really think, because I, too, when I saw the movie, I was like, she's saving Han. She is pushing him away. She's taking the focus off of him. That's how I read it, too. But thinking of it purely as just Kira saving Han, she's not doing anything else but saving Han, to me, in a way, almost takes away her agency a little bit. Like, she's purely doing it for man pain. Mm-hmm. Because she is doing it for herself, too.
Because it's at the bottom of 267, right? Mm-hmm. Of the novelization where she says, and just as L3 had worked with a human even though she had no restraining bolt, Kira would still work with Crimson Dawn. Even beholden to a new, terrifying boss, she still had more freedom and power now than she ever dreamed.
Yeah. See, this gets into that whole, like, she sees her life as surviving, and you're just trying mm-hmm. to survive, you're just trying to stay alive, and this is still a step up, because she has more power, she's in more control in her mind, and we'll never know until we possibly get more from that, if that truly is the case.
Mm-hmm. And, like, earlier we were talking about the quote where Dryden tells her that she will always be a part of Crimson Dawn and never be free. Mm-hmm. So is that a selfish act if she truly believes that, like, this is the only decision? Like, there is no decision. This is just, it's already made for her.
Right. Well, and you have to wonder, too, like, if she wants this. Like, she is a slave to Crimson Dawn, which I'm sure she does not want to be, obviously, because you do see the panic that she kind of feels when, like, Han's around. But maybe, like, she wants to be powerful. Like, we already know this. She wants to live a life on her own terms. She wants to live a life where she's surrounded by beautiful things. Crimson Dawn can provide that for her. She just mm-hmm. has to rise through the ranks. Yeah. And she just killed her master to rise through the ranks. Yeah. You know?
And like, you could say, like, Dryden always had more freedom than Kira did. but he's not free either. So now she's kind of taking his place.
And who's at the top? Who has the most freedom? Darth Maul.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That goes into my, like, little headcanon.
Yes, please tell us your headcanon, because I love it.
Okay, so on Rebels, we find Maul and Malachor crashed, right? So I have this whole theory that Kira set him up to crash, and that maybe she tampered with his ship before he left, and that's the reason why he was crashed on Malachor.
Yes. Yes. I'm here for that.
I'd like to know in that time where, like, Maul's been stuck on Malachor, if she rose to become, like, the big boss of Crimson Dawn while he was kind of, like, out of commission.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Because, I mean, I go back and forth on this. Like, she would never, if she went with Han, she would be living, they would all be fugitives with Crimson Dawn, right? Like, Crimson Dawn would never stop chasing them. They would always be on the run. And they would always be, like, in hiding. She'd never have that life, really, that she wanted for herself. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Crimson Dawn, if she can just rise through the ranks and even get to the point where, like, she owns Crimson Dawn, like, that's the life that she wants for herself. And I do think that she is still saving Han, because if she truly didn't feel anything for him, if she truly didn't see him as a friend or had that compassion, she would have been like, oh, we have to go kill them now. But she doesn't.
Yeah.
She, you know, she keeps that all a secret. So she is still protecting him, and she takes all the blame off of him. Crimson Dawn's never going to go after him.
Yeah.
And at the same time, that kind of removes him completely from her now, because Crimson Dawn has no need to go after him.
Yeah.
And unless he crosses their path again, they have no reason to ever meet again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting when you kind of think of it. Because she's so smart, so you know that, like, she has to kind of be thinking of all of these things.
I'd really like to know what happens to Crimson Dawn.
I really want to know.
Because, like, even, like, let's say my theory is right, and that she rises to leader when she, like, basically dooms Maul to crash. Mm-hmm. And then Maul lives, but then decides that he's going to become obsessed with Ezra. And all these other things. So does he just kind of, like, leave Crimson Dawn behind at that point? And he doesn't care?
Right? Yeah. Like, I have so many questions. And, like, I want to know what happens on Dathomir. Does Kira become a witch? Please.
That'd be amazing.
It would be so amazing. There is one more thing. So it's when she decides to kill Dryden. And I think the wording of it and what she's thinking about is really important, because her section starts with, again, she's thinking of, where is your restraining bolt? And she says, a decommissioned droid shouldn't have been able to get inside Kira's head so completely. But ever since they had arrived on Savarine, she'd thought about the self-made droid and her fight for freedom. She had found kinship with Kira because of Kira's bondage. Kira's restraining bolt lay on the ground before her, blood pooling under him. Her emotions were as complex as the maelstrom as she straightened and looked down at him. Relief it was over. She was freed. Grief that he was gone. He had made her what she was, for better or for worse. And grim satisfaction that her tormentor was dead. So she, you know, she cut off the head. She got rid of him. Her restraining bolt is gone. But Dryden also would have killed Han no matter what. So Dryden, even if Han wasn't there, had to die. He had to die so that Kira could liberate herself. He had to die so that Han could be free.
Mm-hmm.
So it was for both.
In my mind, Kira thinks that she's as free as she'll ever be in the position that she puts herself in at the end.
I think you're right. I think you're right, because she doesn't see that there's any other way. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a master in her
even
mind.
Even if, like, she would have been able to get away, she doesn't consider that as an option.
No.
Fully. Like, she doesn't even humor that thought.
Mm-mm. And whether that's because that's not, she just doesn't think it's possible, or that's just not the life that she wants, it's just not an option for her. And she does say, it wasn't as simple as killing Dryden, and Han would probably never understand that cutting off the head didn't always make the monster go away.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always something else.
They grew another head.
And you know what? That line means so much more now that we know that Palpatine's alive.
Because wow.
Snoke's gone.
And there's still another head.
Oh my god. I just thought
about
that.
How did we not see this? That Maul... That, like,
wow.
That Dryden... So we knew, we, like, always knew that Dryden and Snoke had a lot in common. But how did we not say, like,
wow.
Well, who is Maul in this story? It's wow. Palpatine.
Oh, my God. We just went on and on about how, like, everybody always has a master. There's always somebody else. We cut off the head in Last Jedi. Snoke's mm-hmm. gone. Except there was another master. Oh my god.
Wow.
This just goes to show you guys, like, everything's important.
And everything. It's all planned.
It's all planned. Oh. Oh my god. I can't. My mind is blown. Star Wars is so good. Because there's throne room yeah. parallels, right? Everybody has mm-hmm. made that. The throne room parallels.
I think the difference is that Kira is aware of Maul, where Ben is not aware of Palpatine.
That's very true. Because baby boy Ben Solo is his father and is a baby boy. So he is the good guy. He believes that if he kills Snoke, him and Rey can rule it all, whereas Kira knows that there's something else. Wow.
Yeah. Read the book.
Read the book.
Buy the book. Support Mer Lafferty. She's mm-hmm. amazing.
Yeah.
I want more Star Wars books from her.
I want every novelization to be by Mer Lafferty.
I even want original stories from her. I mm-hmm. want everything.
I would love it. So if we did get a Kira story, I would want it to be from Mer.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. I feel like she just really understands.
Yeah.
Ray really... Carson did a great job too, but mm-hmm. I feel like Mer Lafferty just really did a great job.
If they do a show, please consult her.
Please. Oh my god. It's like, do a show where it's revealed that Val was also not dead and is also going to topple Crimson Dawn with Kira.
Yeah.
Because they're awesome. That was my crazy crack theory, that Val wasn't actually going to be dead and she was going to be in on it with Kira. And then I was Boo Boo the Fool.
I wish.
Is there anything else, or are you ready to move into Little Bebo's?
I think I'm ready.
All right, so what are Little Bebo's, Alex?
Little Bebo's are things that we enjoyed about the topic that we talked about, and typically they are small things, like obscure things.
Yeah, so my Little Bebo this week is that Kira wears nail polish. I think her and Holdo are some of the only ones that we've seen actually wear mm-hmm. nail polish, and it just goes back into that whole thing where Kira loves beautiful things. Like, she just, mm-hmm. she loves things that are pretty. She likes things that are feminine. And she paints her nails. And when she's young, I can't tell if she's got, like, a sparkle coat on it or, like, a crackle coat. But then when she's older, like, it's just that sleek, you know, matte coat. And I'm just like, I love it. It says so much, and it's such a little detail.
Mine is really similar. I just love all her outfits. And I'm planning on cosplaying as her for Anaheim.
Yes.
So, and, like, I'm probably going to do the jumpsuit, which makes me really excited because I love being comfortable at cons. I don't want to be uncomfortable. And that outfit is actually very comfortable, so I'm excited.
Yep. It's going to be so great. I'm excited.
She is fashionable, but she has sense to have comfortable outfits.
She does, though. Like, everything mm-hmm. she wears is just great. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that is so great about her. Like, it's just so unapologetic. And I feel like it really wasn't until Solo and Last Jedi that we saw really, like, unapologetic fashion. Like, She's also a fashion icon. Yes. But you really get that explored in Queen Shadow, which was post Solo and Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just, it's great. I love it. I love fashion, and I'm glad that Star Wars has realized that fashion is amazing.
Yeah. The thing with Padme is that she doesn't have that many outfits that I would be like, I'm going to cosplay that because I'm going to be comfortable. Most of them
and
are not comfortable.
And it's also a very big project.
Yeah.
I applaud Padme cosplayers because that's so hard.
They're so talented. And we saw the wedding dress Padme in Chicago. That was so pretty. Yeah.
Well, and all, like, her whole veil and everything was, like, hand done.
It's insane.
Like, oh, God, it's gorgeous. Like, we bow down before you guys. Like, it's amazing. I'll just stick to my Kaz, which is, just can be done with duct tape. Kaz players unite. So that's going to wrap it up for Kira. We would always still love to know what you guys think of Kira. We've really loved reading all of your comments on our Twitter questions, especially the one for this week. But if you have anything else that you'd like to add, we would really love to hear from you guys. Mm-hmm. As Alex alluded, next time we do a discussion episode, we will be talking about Crash of Fates. Yeah. Alex is almost done with it because she got it early.
I got the book early. I have 20 pages left.
Do you want to give us any like something to look forward to, like?
So if you're planning on going to Galaxy's Edge, I think it's really, really interesting. I'm looking forward to, like, kind of spotting out all the little, like, Easter eggs they're throwing in the book, like, for people going to Galaxy's Edge. There's some good tropes in the book. It's a lot of fun, and we'll do a full review of it next time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and as we talked about last time, you know, we're moving into all of these new books, and we did rank our excitement level for all of the books, and we'll be revisiting that once we have everything out. So
we're going to have our actual rankings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll probably also touch on a little bit Myths and Fables, because you got that. You're going to get that too, right?
Yeah, I pre-ordered it.
But it's mostly going to be Crash of Fate, and we'll talk a little bit about Myths and Fables. Mm-hmm. It's going to be exciting. But that is going to do it for this episode. As always, if you would like to be part of Lipstick and Lightsabers, we would love to hear your Star Wars story. We've got some little prompts and questions for how to do that in the description of every episode. But you can email us at lipsticklightsabers1901@gmail.com. Just give as little or as much as you like, and we will work with you guys. If you need us to read your story for you, that is totally fine. We can also do that. So however you guys need to do it. If you want to find us on Twitter and see all of the beautiful art that Alex does for every episode, you can find us at lip_lightsabers. I will also mention that I ordered some more buttons for people who send in their Star Wars stories. So if you would like some buttons, I got you, fam. It's great. But she is at Alex Leonis, and I am at McCarter Shannon. And we will see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.